Welcome to Uniquely Loved, a celebration of authenticity and divine inspiration. We are encouraged to be our own unique, authentic selves. Join me, Tech Witch Nikki, as we discuss spiritual gifts and skills we can develop and enhance, speak with amazing people using their skills in a variety of ways, and explore the different ways to connect to the wonders of the universe. Hello, my loves. I am excited to be able to introduce to you Tracy Nicholas for today's episode. Now, Tracy Nicholas works at the intersection where folklore and mindful living and creativity meet. As an animist, nature is central to her spiritual practice, and living in a way that reduces her impact on the planet's resources is an ongoing focus for her. Folkloring is the podcast that she co-hosts, explores practical folklore and ways to bring it off the page and into our day-to-day lives. She is the theater and film correspondent for the top-ranking show, The Folklore Podcast. She also produces Stories from the Hearth for The Folklore Podcast. She is a folklore researcher, and her upcoming book explores the true nature of magic and our beliefs about it. She is a game designer and creates escape room style games in a subscription box format. Tracy has a degree in stage management from Columbia College and a Master of Science in Learning and Organizational Change from Northwestern University. She lives in Chicagoland's North Shore, where she rarely lives up to the exacting standards of her feline supervisor, Puck. Thank you for being a guest on the show today, Tracy.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And I love that you put your cat, Puck, into your bio and everything. That's adorable.
Yeah, sometimes I think he's more of my overlord than my supervisor, but you know, this was business related, so I figured.
Well, I think most cats have that demeanor anyways.
It's true. It's very true.
Now, could you explain a little bit about what being an animist is for the listeners?
Yeah, so as an animist, I believe that not only are we all interconnected, but that spirit doesn't just belong to humans, right? It also connects us to animals, to other living creatures. I don't know that I go so far as to, say that inanimate objects do have spirit as well, although I believe that the earth does. And so generally, it's a very nature-focused kind of spirituality, and I get a lot of my strength and energy from being out in nature, and that's really, in essence, what animism is to me.
Okay, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
I love going out and walking trails, and I got a tree in my backyard that I'll occasionally just connect to and, you know, hug to help me ground.
Yeah, actual tree hugging.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. Yeah, I'm very lucky that I live right across the street from an arboretum. And so it's got a little canal running through it. And so I can just sort of, you know, run across the street and kind of lose the city around me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice.
Now, your podcast, I caught a couple of episodes for the folkloring, and you explore so many diverse topics, and I love it. You bring in so many different stories to mm-hmm. help explain things. What's the driving force behind that for you?
Well, I've always loved folklore since I was, you know, very young. And I, as I got older, I went into business for a while. I worked in construction for almost 20 years. But then as I started to get a little bit older and I started thinking, what do I really want to be doing with my time and energy? And I decided to go into gaming. And that's when I started designing games. And one of the series that I created was about folklore. And so when I was building those, I was really very interested in consuming all different viewpoints about folklore that I could. And what I discovered was that in the world of folklore podcasts, There are a couple of different kinds of ways that they approach their, their offering, their presentation. And one is there are storytellers, and they're telling traditional tales. They are telling them sometimes in new and interesting ways from different perspectives, but they're storytelling, basically. And then there are more academic looks at folklore. What did people believe? Why do they believe what they did? And what were the socioeconomic, forces in play when these stories were being created or changed? And how does folklore work going from an oral tradition to a written tradition, and all sorts of things like that? And so when I was talking to my co-host, Tanya, we were just talking one day because she's got a business that is about, she offers classes for different traditional folk crafts. And I was helping her do her strategy just because we like each other and, it was fun because strategy is fun. Everybody knows that. And we started talking about how we each had been looking to do a podcast about folklore. And I was already working on the folklore podcast at that point. And we started saying, well, we don't want to just do another one because there's a lot of really great podcasts out there. And that was Puck expressing his displeasure at me, apparently. And so we started talking about where's the intersection in what she does and what I do. And we started talking about folklore and folk crafts. And we went, you know what, there really isn't out there is how you bring folklore off the page and how you incorporate it into your actual, daily lived experience. And so we just started talking about it. And at this point, we started, our first episode came out in November of 2023. And here in, early March of 2024, we've got like topics through the end of the year. We just, every time we talk, we're like, wait, we should do something about. And so the energy kind of builds between us. And I think that we have a really good way of working together. And that's how we come up with it. And then our process that we use, we go back and forth with who's going to take lead on doing the research. And so somebody starts out and they do all the research and then, hand it over to the other person. And then they do their research and add to it. And then when we get together to record, we just riff off of each other. And it's mostly what's in our research, but sometimes new stuff comes up. And so it feels like, we always have so much more to talk about than we could fit into what a reasonably timed episode would be.
I have yet to figure out what a reasonably timed episode would be. Mine range from, anywhere from like 5 minutes to an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, and you have to, I think, decide the level of detail you want to get into when you have the kind of podcast that I do, because it can be a fine line between we want to give you the history and the background, then we want to talk about, what the thing is, and then we want to talk to you about how you can do it. And there's a fine line between doing a deep dive into what a thing is and what the history is, and getting really bogged down in the details. So it's a balance.
Okay. Now, you mentioned game designing and including folklore in that. Can you explain a little bit?
So the kinds of games that I design are escape room style games, but it's in a subscription box model. So you order it, and then once a month you get a box that comes and it has a new game in it. And when I was, I, the first series I did was about resistance efforts throughout history. And it was great. I'm not as much of a history buff as I am of a folklore enthusiast. So I, and it's a great series. I love that, the first series. But when I started designing the craft, it really was a more of a passion project to me. So I look at what the lore is, and sometimes I have to fictionalize it. I don't ever really do anything that isn't like, isn't part of what the lore was, but I will sometimes build a story around, a particular thing. And It's the basic premise is you're working for a center that researches folklore, and they're hiring you on as, basically a contractor, and you need to help them with certain projects and figure certain things out. And so you get a box, and it's filled with ciphers and puzzles and different things. And each of the stories is, based around the fact that you have to figure stuff out. And so I tried to pick folklore from all around the world and, give it a good mix. And then it's just a matter of saying, how can I make it make sense that you have to solve puzzles within the context of this story? And it's an iterative process, right? I'll write a puzzle and then I'll be like, oh, I have to change the text because now that doesn't it doesn't fit. And I go back and forth with the stories that way.
That sounds a lot like a lot of fun.
It is definitely a lot of fun. And it's funny because it's what doing the research for that is what took me down the path of podcasting because my early research, I was just listening to the folklore podcast. And I was, when I'd be walking or working in the yard or what have you, I was gathering stories. And I got a couple ideas that I ran with from episodes of that podcast. And so, it was like I was very beholden to that particular podcast. And then one day I was listening to an episode and Mark Norman, the host, said, oh, we're looking for people to do film reviews. And I get bored very easily in a work environment. I'll do something for a few years and I'll be like, I need something new. I always like to be learning new things. I'd never done a film review. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. And if it's terrible, don't host it. So I started doing film reviews. And then after a while, he was liking my reviews and he said, you know, what would you think about doing interviews? I've got these directors of, these films, these indie films, and I don't have time to interview them. I'll try. And so I did. And that's when I started just, and I was just doing interviewing at that point. And then I became the theater and film correspondent, and I did a series on storytellers as well, interviewing storytellers. And that was kind of the jumping off point for me to say, I could do a podcast of my own as well. So the games are what led me down the path of the world of folklore podcasting.
That is amazing. And have you thought about, or have you already brought into some of the folklore within your spiritual practice, or has it enhanced your spiritual practice in any way?
I think that it's not as much spiritual practice, perhaps, but definitely my mundane life. And part of it is just being aware of what it is around you that is infused with folklore, and it's easy for me when I was doing an episode, for example, on All Things Liminal. I started paying attention when I'd walk through, doorways and feel the energy from one room to the next or from inside to outside and that kind of thing. And so I think that it helps to remind me of what my spirituality is and to continue to make it part of my everyday life.
Okay, and your everyday story, because you're
Yeah.
writing your own story, which is awesome too.
It's true. It's very true.
And I'm curious, because the picture that you sent me for the graphic and everything has you leaned up against a headstone in a cemetery. Was that the episode that you mentioned regarding All Things Liminal? Was that what prompted that?
No, that picture I took a couple of years ago, and I was just taking a drive, and I was up by my the town I grew up in, which is about 15 miles north of where I currently live. And it was not too long after my mother passed away, and we were getting ready to sell the house. And so it was a hot day, and I remember just thinking I wanted to go somewhere peaceful. And that particular cemetery is, a very, very old cemetery, and it's not currently active. And it's tiny. And I remember, going there when I was in high school, as you do. And so it just I stopped there and it was peaceful. And the friend that I was with, I was like, let's take some pictures. And so we did.
Okay. Do you find yourself like feeling the energy when you're in such places?
I find myself feeling the energy everywhere I go, and not always in a good way. I do. I pick up on other people's energy all the time, and I pick up, nature around me. And, a place like that to me feels very, very peaceful. I don't think I've ever been to a cemetery or a graveyard that was supposed to be haunted. So maybe I'd have a different experience there. I've just gone to regular graveyards and cemeteries. But yeah, I don't, I feel the nature, the natural energy in a place like that, not necessarily any energy from beyond.
Okay. That's actually really cool because feeling peace, I don't know, that's all I usually feel when I'm there as well. I live in Virginia and we have a whole lot of a whole lot of cemeteries, especially from the Civil War and everything. So it's just it's interesting happening in, and I don't know, sometimes I'll get stories that play out for me to kind of just explain, or but usually it's just nice and chill. And then if somebody wants to come forward and explain something, then they can. Like, oh, hey, you notice me.
That's great.
You have a favorite tale, folklore tale that you just that got you
Ooh.
started or or that
Ooh.
really gravitates towards you?
Well, I don't know that I have a favorite per se, because it's so, I mean, there's so much folklore and it's so wide, wildly varying. I am not a huge fan of like urban legends. Like they're interesting, but they're really not my deal. I like older stories, and I like to find the kind of stories that are have been kind of pre Anderson or Grimm Brothers, or because those to me were captured and written down through a particular lens, and they don't necessarily reflect, what the sensibilities would have been at the, of the people that were telling it, in the oral tradition. And so when you can find, instances that are more true to what would have been actually, not from a white middle class, upper middle class perspective, then I really do like that a lot. And I like tales from around the world. I really like the Anansi stories, the trickster god from Africa. He's a spider. I like those stories a lot because, and I like trickster gods a lot because they, are often using, their cleverness to get out of trouble from like people in power. And I think that that's really interesting when people tell stories that. And so they don't always succeed, right? And so I do like that. So, and I like sort of more morally ambiguous characters that way. I really do like Baba Yaga. So I might pick some Baba Yaga stories as my favorites. But I like her as a character, not one particular story. And obviously there are some very famous Baba Yaga stories, but I mean there's a witch who's in a house running around on chicken legs. And what's not to love about that? And you go, you ask her for something, and she might take you in and mentor you and help you, or she might kill you. You don't know.
It's all about boundaries and how you approach.
Exactly. And I think that it speaks to how we feel. Like, we want to think of ourselves as good, basically, but then sometimes we're like, oh my God, I did this thing that was, selfish or whatever. And so I love the morally ambiguous characters, because I feel like we can connect to them better than, here's a princess and the prince wants to marry her because look how beautiful she is. And here's a prince, and he's going to win the princess's hand because he's brave and noble. And so, and that just doesn't speak to me as much. That was a really long answer to your question.
I love it. I have a tarot deck, a tarot of the divine that actually has folklore from all over the world on it, and the Wheel of Fortune is that spider god. I'm trying to find it real quick. And
Okay.
I absolutely love because the stories, they help connect us to spirit. They help connect us to the natural world around us, and make us think about our own choices, our own morality and everything.
All right. Yeah, there he is. I love him. He's a great character.
Yes.
And there are so many of those stories. I have a box on him, and that one is a little different than most of my other boxes, because instead of one great big story that sort of is told throughout the whole thing, there in that one there's a series of stories, because there are just so many wonderful stories. There's why does a Nazi run on water? Why are his legs so long? And so there are all these different little tales that I couldn't cut any of them out. I wanted them all. And so that box is a bit different.
That's cool though, because just like the spider web, you weaved it all together.
Yeah, exactly.
Is so cool. Where can people find this escape room style game?
Well, the company name is Mad Men and Heroes. So
Okay.
you can go to madmenandheroes.com. And you'll find all of the different offerings that I have. There are three series currently. One is called The Resistance. The one on folklore is called The Craft. And then there is a series based on a high fantasy novel series that a friend of mine wrote, epic
Cool.
fantasy novel series.
Cool.
That was a lot of fun to do. I love collaborating. And if you do go to the website, you can see, you can just look for, there's a list of all the series and the schedule of when I send out the boxes, because the boxes come, they're 12-month series. And
Okay.
so, every March I send out the same box, and every, July I send out the same box. And so you can just see what they are. And if anybody would like to special order, of course, you can just email me and I can send out any of the boxes at any time, really.
Okay, well, that's awesome. And where can people find your podcast?
So our podcast is called Folkloring, and that is a word that we made up. It's not a word anybody else uses. So if you look in any of your podcast apps for folkloring, we should come up pretty high on the list. Or you can just go to our website at folkloringpodcast.com.
Okay. I'm definitely going to be including all the links in the description.
Great.
Are there any other stories you'd like to share?
Wow. Well, I don't know about particular folklore stories, but I will share the very early roots of my animist ways with you.
Perfect.
So when I was a little kid, I was very bookish and very shy. And so I wasn't interested at recess in running around and, doing sports like things. And my grade school backed up to some woods, and it was a park, but there was a wooded area between the park itself and my school. And so I would go just barely into the woods, right? And there was this very large rock. And when it was nice out, I would go at recess, and I would decorate the rock. And I would put little bits of moss and like little leaves if they were brightly colored, or flowers if it was in the spring. And I'd go out there every day and I'd, clean off anything that had died off. And in retrospect, I was like, oh, well, that was a nature altar then, wasn't it? So I've always been drawn to it. And I think that it's just carried me through, good times, bad times in life. But like, nature always feels to me like it's a safe place. Of course, I don't live in a place where the animals will kill you if they find you.
Well, I mean, nature has a lot of different sides to it, and it's all celebrated.
It's true. Although I will say, in the arboretum across from me, there is has always been a coyote pack that lives there. And at 2 in the morning, when they are out hunting, that is a very unnerving sound.
I
It's
bet.
terrifying. It does not sound like it's of this earth, I can tell you that.
I've heard foxes in my area, and it's just like, was that a person? Because they sound like a woman screaming more often than not. It's like, ooh, okay.
It definitely can be terrifying.
And oh, that is, it's so cool that you were able to link, how you were as a child gravitating toward nature and grounding with the rocks and the trees and everything, and see how that has impacted you throughout your whole life.
Yeah, and it's funny because I feel like everything that I've done sort of has come together and crystallized in this moment, because as a child too, going to, the public library, and bless librarians, they had a section in the children's wing of the library that was just hundreds of books of folklore. So some librarian there must have loved folklore. And so I was, beyond the, Andrew Lang, the fairy books, the colors, but it was, Russian folk tales and African folk tales and Irish folk tales. And so I would go and check out as many as I could. And at some point, I think that my parents probably asked the librarian to tell me that there was a 10 book limit, and I couldn't check out more than 10 books, because I'd come up there with this, and then I'd be up in the middle of the night reading. And so I think my parents were trying to get around that, but I believed it, because I would follow the rules as a little kid. So when they told me that, I was like, okay, only 10. Boy, I was agonizing trying to figure out which 10 books I was going to bring home that week. So I brought it all together, all lo these many years later, my animism, the folklore. And I'm getting to live a life just doing exactly what it is that, all that pulls together all the things I love. I will say, as far as practicing and spell work and ritual, I'm more at that part of my life where I'm just kind of like, instead of doing a big elaborate ritual, I'm just like, okay, let's put a little bit of, I'm going to put a cinnamon stick over the door because I don't want to clean up cinnamon that I've blown into the house on the first of the month, So I'm not a lazy witch. I'm just a very practical practitioner, I would say.
It's, and sometimes we gotta be when we have so many other responsibilities that, need our attention and everything. Trying to make time for the big elaborate rituals can be emotionally draining.
It really can be. And I feel like that's what the folkloring itself is about. Of, everybody's busy, everybody's got a lot of stuff going on, but if you don't pay attention to your spirituality, you'll find that practice at all for, long periods of time. If it's a big, difficult thing to do, you can let it fall by the wayside. And even and it see, I've got an app on my phone that is called Mindfulness Bell. And when my phone is not on Do Not Disturb, like it is right now, it will just randomly ring throughout the day. And it's like Okay, take a moment and pay attention to your what's happening around you. What does the air feel like? What sounds are around you? What are the, smells that are around you? And it just slows you down so you don't miss life by not paying attention to it. And so that's, there can be very easy ways to get your practice in that don't have to interrupt your day, be big and difficult, and then you're actually doing it, which is the important part, right?
And breaking it down into small little bits helps just like your bell.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Sure, this was a lot of fun, and I look forward to hearing more of your show.
Yeah, and I'm already following you on Instagram, and
Great.
I'm definitely subscribing. I've already caught two of your episodes. I'm gonna be keep listening because, oh man, it's really refreshing. It really is, and it's just it listening. It's like a nice breath of fresh air.
Well, if you ever have any ideas of topics you'd like us to explore, you can definitely let us know. And that our email is folkloringpod@gmail.com.
Okay.
Any suggestions are welcome. Any reviews help us out a lot to grow. And so, yeah, I hope that you keep enjoying it.
Thank you. And listeners, I will be putting all that information in the description of the episode so you can find her, listen to their podcast. It's awesome. And if you have any ideas, email them too.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you for joining me today as we explore what makes us uniquely loved. Be sure to subscribe. More adventure awaits. For more articles and to work with me as your personal guide, go to www.techwitchlayer.com. Always remember, you are accepted. You are valid. You are loved.